Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to multifamily industry operations. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with two special guests who are extremely knowledgeable and right in the middle of today's topic. And today, we're discussing something that is important and timely to the multifamily industry. Our topic is Multifamily Trends, Rapid Fire Style. I have joining me by phone two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Stephanie Anderson, the Senior Director of Communications and Social Media with Grace Hill, and Moshe Crane, the Director of Leasing and Marketing with Sage Ventures. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you so much for having us.
I am so excited to do this. It's something we've actually never done on the show, and that's to throw out a topic and just kind of let the two of you discuss it. And I'm sure sometimes you'll agree, and sometimes you'll have different sides of the coin to talk about. But I'm excited about it. And Stephanie, I'm so excited to have you back on the show again. I hope one day soon you'll be able to come to Houston, be in the studio with us. We've talked about it for a couple of years, but maybe it'll happen this year.
It is for sure on my bucket list. We will make it happen.
All right, great. Well, let us get started. One of the topics that is on many people's minds in the multifamily industry is staffing. And, you know, we did a show in the past, Stephanie, on the Great Resignation in multifamily. And one of the things that people attribute this to is that people are leaving companies for more money. True, false? What's your opinion? Stephanie, you start.
It's a great question. So, you know, the numbers were recently released from September for Job Snapshot reports, and it showed that the number of employees who quit their jobs just in September alone rose to a record high for the third month in a row. So this is now, again, making it harder for companies to maintain staffing levels because we're in the worst labor shortage in decades. Specifically, 4.4 million people quit their jobs in September, which is absolutely mind-blowing. And just to have a little bit of contrast here, just half as many had quit during the early stages of the pandemic. So for anyone who wants to say, well, you know, a lot of this is due to the pandemic and the uncertainty, that's really not true because we're seeing it escalate now more than ever. So that gets us a little bit out of that safety zone that people had in terms of the pandemic. And now they're reprioritizing what's most important to them. And I think we see that financial stability is going to top that out. You know, Paul, you and I have talked many times about mental health. We've talked about great culture in the workplace. You know, all of those are very important topics, and they all go hand in hand. But I think at the end of the day, if the money's not right, people will jump ship. And if the other factors aren't there, so if it's not the best company or they don't have strong leaders and the company culture is really slacking, you're of course going to find that people are going to jump ship for 50 cents more an hour because they feel more valued in a new company coming along than they do within their current organization. So I'm going to have to go with yes.
Moshe, what are your thoughts?
So I look at this from an employer perspective and an employee perspective, and what I'm seeing and my vision is, I guess, is a little limited. And disclaimer, all views are my own, not my company's. On the ground, I'm seeing people who have left our leasing team and have gone to different industries. There have been from assistant managers who have gone for, have left to make more money. From an employer standpoint, I think that, you know, not just what people leaving, but a shortage of who you can attract. I think that companies really have to double down on their culture and creating a real development system for taking an ordinary person and making them extraordinary. Obviously, it depends on the size of a company and what they can do with that. But you know, doubling down and building your teams versus you know, trying to hire them, I think from an employer perspective is a smart move, and I think that you should view your other management companies as your competition for talent, because people are going to have choices of where they can go. I kind of look at it like college sports recruiting, where there's no salaries. You're recruiting based on your brand, your reputation, and what are the chances of that player becoming pro. So you want to have a reputation of this is a place where people really develop their careers, and this is, you know, a real resume builder. From an employee standpoint, there's a lot of frustration because companies are offering, you know, more money or sign-on bonuses and all these things for new hires, and not all are looking at what their current employees are making. So that's creating some sort of tension. But I think as an employee, it's a great opportunity to really step it up. Instead of, you know, complaining, you know, this is what I'm making and why are you looking to hire somebody else, I think there should be this conversation that I'm interested in becoming the assistant manager or property manager or a regional manager or a corporate position, and, you know, sort of showing your value and earning it instead of just complaining and saying you're going to go somewhere else. Now, if you don't like your company and it's not a good culture, then yeah, you do have options and you're in a good place. But if you like your company and you just feel like you haven't had the chance to really grow, now is, in my opinion, a golden opportunity to do that. So I think there's a lot of factors of why there's this great resignation and why people are leaving. Some of it is money. Some of it is burnout from the industry. Some of it is just, you know, not feeling that this fits their lifestyle right now.
All right. Well, we're going to leave that question and we're going to go to another rapid fire question. We've got about 4 minutes left in this segment. Virtual leasing in 2022. Is it still a thing, or is in-person touring still king? That's your ball of wax right there. Boshi, why don't you start?
Yeah, so I get bothered when there's data that says, you know, from during the pandemic that virtual leasing is up, you know, 100%. That's because there was no other choice. So the data in a lot of cases is biased, and it's often sometimes provided by those who are selling solutions for virtual leasing. On-site, you know, my experience, and I recently did a poll on LinkedIn about this, has been people prefer an in-person tour. When we, you know, bought a property during the pandemic in December 2020 and the previous owner had their offices closed, we opened and people were like amazed and shocked, like, this is great. I'm kind of sick of doing my own self-guided tours. And as a director of leasing, my core belief is that the biggest impact on a leasing a prospect is the leasing specialist. So in terms of effectiveness, we want to have self-guided tours. My experience is showing that prospects prefer that. So I don't think it's this or that. I do see that there's a lot of roles for virtual leasing. I think that, you know, with occupancy so high, a project that I would love to do, and I think everybody should do, is you should create a video tour for every single unit that you have. So before somebody moves in, you're creating this so that when you're trying to lease it on notice, you actually have a video tour of the exact apartment to show, because people want to know. They feel a lot more comfortable knowing this is exactly what they're getting into versus you're just showing me the a virtual of the model. Now, you know, there are other parts of the country and where, you know, a lot of their prospects are coming from out of town, and there's really definitely a space for that. But my belief is that you want to keep your leasing agents and in-person tours as your go-to.
All right. Stephanie, got 2 minutes in this segment. Take it.
All right, no pressure, 2 minutes or less. You know, Grace Hill recently produced a report in partnership with LeaseLog, and it's the 2021 Rental Housing Market Report. So if you haven't seen it, be sure to look for it. We found during that survey report that 70% of respondents that reported self-guided tours make up less than a quarter of their total tours this year. So whereas at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a massive shift towards offering self-guided tours, interestingly enough, 67% of respondents report in-person agent-guided tours accounted for more than half. That's crazy, more than half of total tours in 2021. Okay, so this is definitely in line with what we're hearing from Mr. Crane. So when speaking with other management companies, they too are seeing that in-person tours are still extremely relevant. So my verdict here, like all things in our business, technology does allow our on-site teams to enhance the resident experience. But It must be used without replacing the human touch. So offering a combination of all three, virtual, in-person, and self-guided tours, is really going to allow your prospective residents the choice they want. And I feel that that combination will continue to be successful for all. So I am in alignment that we are seeing more in-person tours. I agree that back in 2020, we can't really combine it with virtual tours because at the end of the day, there really weren't any other options. And I think we should all be mindful when we talk about Zoom fatigue. We constantly talk about that in terms of employees and what we're seeing in the workplace. I think similarly enough, when we think about virtual tours, it can be very similar, missing that human touch. So combination of all three is king in my opinion.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to stop here, and we're going to come back right after this short break with more of this rapid-fire style of discussing multifamily trends. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Multifamily properties' water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing multifamily trends, rapid-fire style. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone are two multifamily industry veterans, Stephanie Anderson, the Senior Director of Communications and Social Media with Grace Hill, and Moshe Crane, the Director of Leasing and Marketing with Sage Ventures. Before we jump back into the conversation, I'd like to remind our listeners, if you would like to make show topic suggestions, guest suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. So let's start out this rapid-fire style discussion with the topic of security deposits. Are they going to go extinct? Stephanie?
Are they going to go extinct? That's what I'm hearing. So let's actually think back to about 15 years ago. That was really the norm for running apartment specials that included reduced or waived security deposits. At that time, it was fairly common to see specials offered like move in today and pay zero deposit or reduced deposit of $99. And now owners understand how hurtful that was to their bottom line. In their eyes, they thought, great special offered, people will move in quicker, and especially if they don't have much cash in pocket. Well, we also know that since that time, there was something called security bonds that were created. Sure deposit is a great example of that, where you could pay to purchase a certain amount of bond amount, so it was less money for the resident to have to pay up front, and then there was still some security there for the owners and operators of the apartment community. Now, studies have shown, again, that it did not sway a renter's decision to make an on-spot decision if you were reducing rent or even fees as compared to the deposits. So, in fact, when we saw everyone waiving the deposit, there was no stake in the game for the renter, right? So renter moves in, doesn't pay any deposit. They're more likely to damage things. So, again, we're moving past that idea of let's not waive it. We need something in place. But we have to consider now that in this day and time, we're in a very financially struggling economy, and renters are struggling more so than ever to have they want minimal upfront costs. And so how do you kind of meet in the middle with that? There's actually a new technology new to multifamily that moves past security to bonds that I spoke about, moves past, of course, the waiving of those fees or deposit amounts. And instead, they provide better coverage for residents and owners alike. It's actually through a separate system to, you know, the resident would apply for it, and it covers usually about $3,000 for the owner management companies, and the resident is only paying monthly payments that range depending on the amount of coverage that they choose, meaning they either choose the amount of coverage they want or the apartment community has, you know, some sort of standard in place. And I'm wowed by this because the idea here is that data is showing as we move forward, we'll completely go away from security deposits and go to what we call deposit insurance, which is exactly what this new company is offering. So I think it's really cool. I don't think we're there yet. So I don't think we're going extinct tomorrow, but I definitely think it's moving in the right direction. And I think we're going to hear as more data is in place that residents are preferring it and owner and managers are really loving the fact that they can recoup that money so much easier. Because I always think about if the resident is moved out, how in the world can you collect rent on something when you couldn't collect it when they lived there, right? It's a lot more difficult. So now you've got a little bit more stake in the game in terms of having a pool of money that you can pull from that's separate from the bonds. And I think that there's just more security all around here.
Security deposits are going extinct. Moshe, what say you?
I agree. I think it's maybe for a different reason. You know, rents are the highest they've been, and occupancy is the highest it's been. So I don't know if it's a matter of affordability in terms of, I just think that it's more efficient for and less cumbersome, these tools that are out there, you know, versus having to, you know, they make the payment and then you're holding it and returning it. It's a lot smoother an efficient process, these tools. I think there's also a lot of noise in this space. There's a lot of different companies that are doing this, and I don't have the brain space to understand the difference between all of them. I think it would be very interesting to see, you know, typically in our industry, you have one of these products and then one of the big property management softwares acquires them. I think it would be cool to consolidate if some of them started acquiring each other.
Yeah, yeah. You definitely are correct that that is the phenomenon that we see with the consolidation of the big software companies consolidating and bringing people in, but there is a lot of, you know, we just were talking before the show about being at Optech, and a lot of the different folks with the different technologies, a lot of them seem very similar. So consolidation may be in order. Well, let's jump to the next topic that we have on the schedule, which is pet restriction. Who cares about pet restrictions in apartments? Stephanie, you start.
Okay, everyone loves pets. not everyone, but clearly there is a large population that loves their pets. In fact, we're finding more people, you know, have pets than children. And so what we learned in the pandemic was that people were getting pets at higher rates than any other time, and that included our residents. And so this was a great time to bring up the idea of outdated pet policies. Now, let me just paint you a quick picture here. When we think about outdated pet policies, I'm thinking of some of the things we've heard in the past, expensive pet fees, no more than two pets per home, small dogs only, or, you know, weight restrictions under a certain amount, or, you know, of course, the most popular is probably no pit bulls allowed, and really getting into those breed restrictions. And that started long, long time ago, not just from our small owners and operators, but the idea from a liability perspective of, okay, let's keep residents happy by not having too large of pets. We don't upset our non-pet renters, but also we want to be mindful of aggressive breeds. We want to be mindful of damages that they do inside the apartment home. and just, again, that liability to owners in large. Well, many years ago, we actually had a company in Virginia where I was at, and it was a small owner management company that took a big risk and said, okay, we're going to do away with weight and breed restrictions. And I'll tell you, it was like gasping when everyone heard it, because it was very, very unheard of. And this was probably about a decade ago. And in this area, it was very new and up and coming. And they got a lot of questions about, what does that mean for your insurance as an apartment community? What if an aggressive breed dog bites someone? How are you going to recoup damage costs, you know, from having these large breeds? You know, there was all this different speculation and talk. And in fact, what they found was they were making more revenue over time because they had lesser vacancy, because they were now the apartment communities that no one else would take those pets were now moving in there. And since then, they evolved to require pet insurance for each resident to have a certain amount. And so they were kind of like the first ones in our area to do it. And what we're seeing now moving across the U.S. is there are so many companies that are saying, okay, let's challenge the status quo of pet policies. Are we doing this because it's truly the best thing for the company, or are we doing it because we've always done it and we're just afraid to make that change? One of the examples I always give comes down to the maximum of two pets per home. Listen, I get it. It makes a multitude of sense in terms of, you know, why people do it. The fact of the matter is, though, if Mr. Smith comes in here and he has three dogs and you tell him he can only have two, you really think he's going to get rid of his favorite pup to move into? No, he's going to move in and not tell you about it, which means now you've still incurring the damages, you've lost any pet revenue that you have, and you increase your liability because you don't have a record of that pet on file living at the community. So it's a very, very messy situation. So no, I'm not telling you, you know, to go out and change your entire pet policy tomorrow and say, yes, let's take it all. It's going to be a case-by-case basis in terms of your apartment community, your demographics, region, those types of things. But I'm telling you, no breed restrictions, no weight restrictions. And we even had a company, TMG, that came out last year and did no pet rent. And Jamin Harkness, who's their executive vice president, came out and said, you know, the results were nothing short of amazing. After 1 year of their wide open pet policy, which is what they called it, they found that 80% of their residents with pets renewed. Based on that metric, they didn't have to charge pet rent. They had savings on vacancy loss, and they didn't have to turn the apartments over. So any weight, you know, any issues from pet damages they could have had is far outweighed by the lesser costs that they have and the additional revenue that they made, you know, by no vacancy and higher rents. So anyways, all I'm saying is I'm 100% in to rethinking these outdated pet policies and recreating.
Moshe, we've got 1 minute left in this segment, so you got the pressure on you now. What's your opinion?
I don't have a strong opinion on the pet. I think it's interesting that this just came after the security deposits, because some of the way we look at the pets is has to do with like the potential damage to the apartment home. But I just like you know, testing different things and testing things that are different. You know, a developer told me that they're building a property and they're debating about trying a pet-free community. And, you know, I like the idea of doing something different. You know, if you become the one community that has no restrictions, or you're the community that has no pets at all, I like the idea of trying different things. I grew up as a pet person, but now not a pet person. But also another thing, you know, a pet peeve, pun intended, that, you have, you know, data that shows, you know, 50% of homes have pets. You know, when I look at our, data, you know, residents, we don't have more than, you know, 28% that have a pet. And you know, to Ms. Anderson's point, you know, testing different things, you know, if you completely waive your pet fees, you can probably push your rents a little bit more just in terms of the perceived value. So I'm all for testing different things, but I don't have a strong opinion of the direction of the way pets are going to go.
All right. Well, we're going to be back right after this short break. You're listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegiant has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegiant's access control product offerings, please visit usallegiant.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing multifamily trends, rapid fire style. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Stephanie Anderson, the Senior Director of Communications and Social Media with Grace Hill, and Moshe Crane, the Director of Leasing and Marketing with Sage Ventures. I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. E-Conserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S. Rev, the leasing management company. Rev is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Allegiant, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties, and CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. So let's start out with a rapid-fire topic this time of the question, staffing should be one person per 100 units. Moshe, you want to take it?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is I think that this type of thinking has to be, I guess, shuffled. Disclaimer, my experience, the smallest community we have is 292 homes, and then we go up to like 535. So that's my experience in that. So I think that, you know, the rules can be very different when you have a smaller community. But I think that we need to figure out what works best and break up the different tasks that we're having our teams do. I think with innovation, you know, you take eyeglasses and then you have contacts and then you have LASIK, where they're all providing vision for you, but it's just moving, you know, in a direction of what's more efficient, what's more comfortable, what's more practical. And we have a lot of items, tasks, responsibilities that our on-site teams have to do. And I think figuring out how to optimize that. Now, obviously, it's going to be different for companies, you know, when you have properties that are closer to each other, sister properties. It's probably different when you're a third-party management versus the actual owner. So there's a lot of different variables. But I think, you know, breaking down the different tasks that you have your team doing and figuring out what's the best way. You know, most properties have an issue of answering every single phone call. So can we provide a different solution, an AI solution, a call center? You know, we might prefer to answer the phones ourselves. But let's say, you know, you're an A-plus at answering the phone, and probably most companies are not. But maybe it's better to be a B-plus and make sure that we're answering every call instead of that A-plus for only 75% of the calls. So I think that, you know, I don't know what the ratio should be, but I think that we should really, really rethink the tasks and how we operate in that sense.
All right, staffing should be one person per 100 units, Stephanie.
Okay, I definitely agree with him when he talks about the differences in data, in knowing when you're looking at something so simplistic as answering the calls. How many calls are you answering? Are you doing it in a timely manner? You know, that is all really important and should be thought about from the company's perspective. You know, I constantly hear when we talk about staffing, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I have to tell you, the one per 100 units, it's broke. It's broke. We have to fix this. So some of the questions I like to think about here is, you know, what level of service is your community offering? What are your demographics demanding from you as a management company and an on-site team? You know, we have to think about that and then rethink about it. apartment renters are requiring more attention nowadays, and that means that a high level of service is required, which then in turn means more staffing is necessary. I like to point out this, you know, NAA released their annual income and expenses report. They do this each year, and they showed operators across the country questioning, of course, the one per 100 units, and the numeric value that NAA has now given based on data is one per 40 units. Wow. So we've gone from one per 100, which is the age-old rule, by the way. It's super outdated. But, you know, now one per 40 units, that's a big, big jump. And I'll tell you, owners cringe when they hear this, especially from that cost perspective. You know, we have to think about this, too, not just from the leasing office side, but equally as important for the maintenance side. So given the example of a brand new lease-up community, just because a property is brand new with everything under warranty should not be a crutch for less team members to be in place, because you're not just fixing things, you know, and diagnosing for someone else to do it with a warranty. You're also providing that exceptional level of service that residents are now requiring, and that takes time and it takes people. So it's broke. One per 100 units, it's a big no for me.
Okay. Well, we are going to jump to the next question, and the next question is, resident needs are changing, and that means amenity spaces too. Stephanie.
Yeah, I agree with this. You know, more green spaces are big, not just from the sustainability standpoint, but they're just important to create happiness and people to get outside. This was a big thing with outdoor amenities being high demand. They were getting there anyway with some of the really cool features apartment developers were doing, but now you have to think about it from a pandemic perspective. I'm hopeful one of these days we'll go back to some sort of normalcy, whatever that looks like, but most areas are still wearing masks. We have vaccinations in place. There's a lot going on there, and what we're learning is that outdoors and being outdoors, still socializing with residents, but being in more open common spaces is so much healthier for everyone involved. And I think the biggest thing we have to think about here is more residents working from home. Yes, that was a big thing in 2020 going into 2021, but now we're finding it's going to be the aftermath too. So many large companies have come out and said, hey, we're going to stay remote. We've known that this can now work, and we're going to move forward. And in fact, we're seeing a lot of companies too say, okay, we don't really want to do at home or in the office. We're going to do that hybrid, right, the mix of the two. And because of that, you have to think about the bandwidth for your internet within your community, because that's huge, especially if you're in a student housing community. But any type of community, you know, more people at home, what's that bandwidth look like for your internet? And then those common spaces that people like to work in, where they get a feel for connecting with others without being so close they're touching. So good things to think about, and I would agree.
Moshe, we've got about 3 minutes left. What's your opinion on this?
So, I did a poll recently on LinkedIn about, you know, should we revisit using pool tables and shuffleboards? And, you know, I think that they're outdated, but I think that the opportunity is not really about, like, well, I don't even know what I would do differently. I think we need to think more about the experience and amenities that we can provide outside of the community. I think everybody's trying to create this great environment. And you know, I do agree that our lifestyles have changed and there are people working remotely, and you can make some adjustments by creating more common area where people could do work. But from my experience, it's still a minimal amount of people who are actually utilizing that space. And I think that the biggest opportunity when we talk about amenities is providing experiences or opportunities outside of the community or in outside of the home that provide something, you know, more than just the home and the quote unquote lifestyle. But, you know, whether it's curating activities for families to do on the weekends or, you know, discounts at food establishments, whatever it is, I think that there's a very untapped area in the amenity space is things for your residents outside of the community.
Yeah, and I want to have a follow-up, Stephanie, because I know both of you are located up in the northeast part of the country, and, of course, our show is coming from the south part of the country, and communities here have the opportunity to be able to have outdoor amenities potentially year-round in some cases. But up in the Northeast, I would seem to be that it was somewhat more seasonal. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's really accurate, and it's a great point. I will say, though, you know, I'm in Virginia. I'm not too far from Mr. Crane, but I will tell you, it is possible for us to experience all four seasons in 1 week here in Virginia. It's crazy, but it's true. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it had gotten colder here, and now it's going to get warmer. I mean, we'll still get some warm days prior to Christmas, per se, in the end of the year, you know. It is something to think about. One of the cool things I've seen from amenity spaces on this mid-Atlantic region is that you'll have developers that create like clubhouse type spaces, and they will do it so there's almost like those garage doors that come up, and you're seeing this in the restaurant industry as well. And so when you do have warmer days, you kind of turn your clubhouse area into a more open space where you can open it up and get a lot of fresh air in there. Equally as important to note is that if you have outdoor spaces, including things like fire pits and heaters outside, you can then use those year round and create some fun resident events around that.
All right. Well, that's a great way to deal with that regionality and the geographical differences around the country. But we're going to break it here, and we're going to be back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
REV, the multifamily leasing company, is the industry's long-term affordable leasing management solution. After all, it's really not about cost. It's really all about revenues. Book REV's expert directors and leasing career professionals for your properties today. Let REV drive revenues and create significant incremental value for you. Reduce stress, stabilize and maximize leasing performance. Never expend resources to recruit or train for leasing again. Lease up, value add, conventional leasing. Let REV be your long-term leasing solution. Go to revlmc.com to find out more. That's revlmc.com. REV is revolutionizing multifamily leasing. Hire REV today.
Well, we're back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing something that is especially important and timely to the multifamily industry. Our topic today is multifamily trends, rapid fire style. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me today by phone are two longtime multifamily industry veterans, Stephanie Anderson, the Senior Director of Communication and Social Media with Grace Hill, and Moshe Crane, the Director of Leasing and Marketing with Sage Ventures. Guys, we've talked about a lot of different topics, and we've saved one for last, which I think a lot of people are always thinking about in multifamily, especially owners, and that's revenue management. So let's talk a little bit about revenue management for about the next 8 or 9 minutes. And Stephanie, you start.
All right. Drum roll, please. So revenue management, yes or no, right? Is that what my thought is? So I'll say this, like all technology, it's only as good as those who manage it. You know, it's like the saying garbage in and garbage out. If you're not inputting accurate and timely data into any platform or system for technology, your results ultimately suffer. So given the idea that everything is correctly inputted on a daily or weekly basis, depending on how your organization operates, my vote is going to be yes for revenue management. Now, I think it's important for us to like take a little journey here. So let's go back for a moment. You know, I started in the industry in 2006. At that point, revenue management was unheard of. I worked for a large REIT company, which was very innovative. And they wanted to just go for this because it was brand new to our industry. Keep in mind, this technology has been used for long, long time through something as simple as airlines and hotels. So it's not like it was unheard of, but to our industry, it was just not something that had been implemented. And I worked for just a few months using manual pricing, which, you know, was common amongst everyone prior to implementing my first revenue management software. Since then, I have worked for multiple organizations that did both manual and revenue management. So I have a plethora of experience on both sides here. You know, the technology, I believe, allows for great revenue increases that surpass the cost of it, because revenue management platforms are not free, right? So if somebody says, okay, manual's free, why would I not just price it daily myself? You know, there are so many models that can be shown to you in terms of how much money you're paying for the program upfront and how quickly you can, you know, recoup that. So your ROI is fairly quick on it for most communities. What I do love about it is it's a huge push for closing the sale due to supply and demand. Now, I do get a lot of pushback from this that says that's a crutch for your site teams. Why can they not close on their own without having it? They can. What's really cool, though, is that there's no question about the pricing. You know, when we talk about an industry that is very strong on the legal side in terms of fair housing, you know, the deal that I offer to each of you has to be the same on the same day, or I have to document if anything changes. And, you know, there's gray areas if you want to stay out of the lawsuit world. And this keeps you very compliant on that side a lot more easily. So for me, the pros to using a system like this, there's less time manually pricing daily. Your lease end dates are better staggered, which helps heavily with vacancy cost and turnover. And then, you know, there's cons like with everything. I'll tell you the biggest con I've always seen is when you put your rental pricing online and you have these huge gaps that show, you know, apartment A may range from $900 a month to $2,300 a month, because that's depending on your move-in date, your lease term. You know, there's all these factors there. So that can be a little scary to people. But honestly, my vote is a yes here, because I think that it's another way for us to use AI to further move our industry forward. And starting with pricing is a great thing to do.
All right, Moshe, this is another one that falls in your area of expertise. What do you think?
Yeah, so if you have no system, then yes, this is better than no system. You know, when I started, we didn't have a very good system for setting prices and adjusting rents in unit amenities. And what we're in the business of doing is, you know, growing in-place rents and returns for our investors. You know, we've been working with a consultant, and we do pricing once a week, and it has worked, you know. I'd like to call it like the West Coast offense, a football reference, and it's a good system and it works well. My experience in looking at the revenue management software and the properties when we buy them, and you know, the sellers are using it, I don't see the return on it. You know, this technology was used, you know, in hotels and airlines. The big difference between those industries and ours, it's a one-time sale. You know, somebody comes in, they rented a room for a night or two nights, maybe even a week, an airline, it's one ticket. If you have your rents adjusting, you know, the rent is down $200, that resident is there for 12 to 15 months now. They're locked in that price, as opposed to just, you know, like a fire sale and, you know, let's sell a bunch of airline tickets and move on, or book a bunch of hotel rooms and move on. This is, you know, someone's locked in there for a longer period of time. And then just also, I think too many people use it totally as a crutch, and you know, they remove all thinking. You know, it's just set it and forget it. And I think there's too many things in our industry that are set it and forget it. Not to go off on a tangent, but I think, you know, marketing agencies, a lot of people don't understand AdWords and all these different tools that they're using, and they have an agency that's doing it, and there's not a lot of transparency. And then you know, we were working with vendors, and I would dive into these accounts, and you could tell that they haven't been touched. And so my experience with revenue management, And even when, you know, speaking to the companies that are selling these services, the data they have didn't, at least that I saw, did not make a very strong case that this is so much better when you add on their fees and everything. Now, their tools can be very powerful if you have somebody who's on top of it. It can be used, but we're not using it, and our system, our West Coast offense, has worked really well, and so I'm not a fan of doing that.
Stephanie, you got something you want to rebut?
You know I do. I agree with the whole crutch thing. That's why I mentioned it, because it's definitely something that comes up. I think it's important to know with revenue management, and by the way, I don't get any kickbacks for this, so, and I'm not going to point out any companies because, you know, like anything, there's always a company that's better than others. But there's an algorithm that they use, just like Google, for instance. And the algorithm here is just kind of like that key ingredient. So when we're pricing daily, we can be very systematic in terms of what we're doing. You know, this apartment has been sitting what we call stale for a while. You know, people aren't looking at it. How are we going to price it? Or we can look at, you know, how many visits we're having to the property. And if we lease three apartments in one day, yes, we need to increase rents, right? Because there's clearly a pattern here. But I think, like anything, it's important to compile that data and use that data to make meaningful decisions. So what I have found with revenue management, it allows us to look at data in a very meaningful way. So we know that the data we're inputting into the system, like pricing premiums and accounting for stale units and things like that, we also know that your leasing team should be trained that when prospect A comes in and they're looking at three apartments, to actually enter those show apartments into their resident software system. And this is where many companies fail, is they actually don't have, they'll just say, okay, tour this person, right? Because that's important for commission and it's important to note for the resident journey, but they don't actually put what apartments they showed. If you're truly digging into your data, and you know that there's been so much interest on this one in-unit apartment, that pricing should be reflected upon that. Now, again, if people aren't applying for that apartment, meaningful enough, people are seeing it, something must be wrong with that apartment, and it needs to be priced accordingly. It's not to say we can't do these things manually, but I think unless you have a corporate team that's very focused on, the minor details here, it's hard for the site staff to do this when they have a million other tasks at hand. And so I think it just helps. You mentioned you can't set it and forget it. 100% agreed. I've even seen that a lot of companies that have made it truly successful with revenue management are your larger organizations, because they have people on payroll within their company. That's all they do, is oversee that system alone for revenue management. And that's difficult, right? Are you able to provide that within your company? Well, most small companies would not be able to do so. So something to think about. So excellent points on your end. I'm still going with yes, though.
Well, we're going to have...
Can I say,
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's say you're going to make an assumption that your fourth floor, you have four stories, and your fourth floor apartments are going to be a higher rent because people prefer to be on the top and there's nobody above them. So you add an in-unit amenity to that. But the pricing tool, everybody who leases at the lower rate for 15 months. So you're never going to know if that amenity that you have in there is actually true, because there's so many different other variables. We use this really cool system with this third-party consultant with a heat map. So when we have our in-unit amenities, we can track how long it's taking something to rent, and then we can look at that based on where it's located in the community or what floor and the different amenities that we've had. And I think that can get really skewed with the AI because of all these other variables that they adjust the rents with.
All right. Well, we are going to have to leave it there. We're definitely going to have another show with this format, because I think it's a lot of fun and very interesting. But I want to transition for a minute. We've got about 3 minutes left total. So take about a minute and a half, Moshe, and tell us a little bit about Sage Ventures and yourself, and how someone can reach out to you if they would like to.
The easiest way to reach out to me is LinkedIn. Sage Ventures, we're based in Baltimore. We're an owner management company. We do have outside investors, but everything we own, we manage. We don't do any third party management. We're growing. When I started in 2018, we were at 1,800 units. We are now above 3,700 units. We are unique. We do have a construction division, and we've been building homes that we sell, townhomes, senior condos, And we are, I think I could say that we're working on a project now where we're going to ground up development and hold on and rent, which would be the first, and something that's been very fun. I didn't think it would be a good idea, but it's actually been working out. We do this rent-to-own program where we offer residents, if they pay the rent on time, a certain percentage of that can be applied to purchasing a home from our construction division. And one of the recent acquisitions that we've had is actually really close to it. So, doing things that are different and trying different things is fun and exciting. We're an entrepreneurial company, and that, I think, is who we're all about, or what we're all about. And I am, my superpower, I guess, is being curious and trying to figure things out and trying to see how we can do things differently and a better way. And I'm having a blast.
Fantastic. Steph, we got about a minute left. Tell us about Grace Hill. And I just wanted to tell you, I know I sent you an email about this, had the opportunity at the OpTech show to meet your CEO, and what a wonderful person she is.
Thank you so much. Kendall Pretzer, our CEO, is absolutely fantastic. And so I'm so glad you got the opportunity to meet her. What I encourage everyone to know about Grace Hill is that, have you experienced the new Grace Hill? Is really the question I ask a lot of people. And, we've been around for a very long time, and we started off fully training in terms of the learning management system with our program Vision. And since then, we have evolved to so many other products, such as policies and mystery shopping and surveys for both resident and employees. And we even have a reputation program now for online reputation management. So we have grown tremendously, and we have a full performance loop. The idea is that all of our products all lead back to the company, the culture, and the people that work there, and really helping them to be better every day at their job. I'll tell you, one of the things that I encourage everyone to look at is if you're in, looking for a new career opportunity, we actually have 8 openings right now. You can check those out on gracehill.com for our careers page. So I encourage you to check those out, but we're doing amazing things. And as always, I encourage everyone to connect with me on LinkedIn, Stephanie Anderson, Cam Caps. I would love to have a conversation with you. And Paul, thanks so much for having me again.
It's my pleasure. And thank you, Moshe. And we are going to have to stop it here, but we will be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You've been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.